Today we're going to look at the subject of siblings. Most people do have a sibling. There are some people, of course, who are an only child, and they will have some of the features of the challenges of siblings in their lifetime just by being in a classroom, having to deal with peers, having to deal sometimes with cousins and so on. But nothing is quite as intense as living with a brother or sister or several brothers or sisters. And, you know, it's curious as to why that is so intense for most people, for all children growing up. I mean, once in a while you do hear of somebody who had a sibling and they just loved that sibling from the beginning of, you know, the time they met them and just carried on with a lovely brother-brother relationship or brother-sister relationship or sister-sister relationship with that person for the rest of their lives. I mean, you do hear of it, but not too often. So, what you mostly hear about is how kids fight a lot and how sometimes this fighting and competition and negativity, whatever, actually persists well into adulthood, sometimes never ending. So, sibling relationships in general are complicated. Just like, you know, occasionally you hear of a marriage that is so beautiful right from the beginning, and it stays that way for all 120 years of it. You know, you do hear of those things, but more often you hear of intense fighting between couples and struggle for these two people who are living together. So, you know, the average person has trouble living with a peer. That seems to be what it is. And often the way we interacted with our siblings will be carried over in some form to the way we will interact in our adult intimate relationship. Because in that situation, once we stop being romantic and just start relaxing into who we really are, so to speak, then what happens is our sibling behavior comes out. So this can happen, and how we were when we were kids is something that we practiced. Keep in mind, we practiced that behavior for 20 years growing up. So when we were provoked, you know, how we handled that challenge is likely to be embedded in our neural pathways in our brain, and therefore is very likely to be triggered in our adult relationships. So a lot of times people will have tremendously sophisticated, excellent social skills with everybody outside their home, right? Except when it comes to how they deal with their parents and how they deal with their siblings. And that little factor, that is how they deal in their family of origin with their intimate people that they live with, the parents and siblings, that's going to be closer to the way they're going to function in marriage, both as a marriage partner and as a parent. So as parents, if we can help our children have successful sibling relationships, we're going to be doing them a lifelong favor, not just because they may have better relationships with their brothers and sisters later on, which is a definite bonus, of course, but because they're going to have better interpersonal skills with the people who will matter most to them in their lives, their own spouses and their own kids. So what is it that parents can do to help siblings actually get along? Well, let's start right at the very beginning. So we have a child who has no siblings, and then a new baby is born. What can parents do right from that place? And I'd say, you know, there's going to be a natural uneasy feeling as the new baby is brought into the house. There's a new member of the family, and usually we're looking at a 2-year-old or 3-year-old, sometimes a 4-year-old or 5-year-old, who is now wondering, you know, what this new person means in terms of the parents' time and attention. Will there still be enough love for me? You know, will there still be enough time for me? Will I still get all the goodies and treats that I had before, or do I have to share everything now? So the child is just uncertain at first. And a lot of that uncertainty will go away when he sees how the parents deal with this new baby. The uncertainty can be confirmed that, yes, there's going to be a shortage of time and attention around here now. There's going to be a shortage of love, definitely. Or, oh, as it turns out, there's plenty of love to go around. There's plenty of time and attention, and it's really okay. So we want, obviously, to help the child to be in the second category there and figure be very secure with how much love is available to him. And we can do this by making sure that we do not promote a toddler when a baby is born. That is, a baby, a toddler, like a two-year-old, a one-and-a-half-year-old, a two-year-old, a two-and-a-half-year-old, or even a three-year-old, was a real little guy just before the baby was born. And then when this itsy-bitsy tiny baby comes onto the scene, the toddler seems humongous. The toddler seems so big now and sometimes gets treated as if he's 15 years old or 25 years old instead of just the little itsy-bitsy guy that he still is. So it's very reassuring to toddlers to make sure that they know they're still your loved and cherished baby, just like they were before. And saying things like, oh, we have two babies now, is very reassuring and comforting to toddlers when a new baby is born, because the baby does not want to be promoted. The toddler baby does not want to be promoted into a new category, the one who's not so lovable. You know, oh, you're a big boy now. Well, what does he know about big boys? You know, babies, he knows when you go up to him and tell him, oh, you're the cutest baby in the world. Oh, mommy loves her baby. And you've been talking like that to him for a couple of years. He knows that that's nurturing, loving talk. But what's big boy talk, right? Big boy is like tough and doesn't get so much, you know, hoochie-coochie, lovey-dovey stuff anymore. And that's the last kind of message we want to convey to a kid when a new baby is brought into the house. We want to say, oh, there's lots of loving going on around here for everybody. We've got two babies, all the more love, all the more fun, all the more coochie-coochie. Come on, let's cuddle and get it all, you know. That's really what we want to do. Now, if the toddler says that he's a big boy or she's a big girl, you know, I'm a big boy now, I don't wear diapers, or, you know, I'm a big girl now, I sleep in my own bed, it's fine to agree with the child. I just wouldn't introduce that concept at this time. If the child introduces it himself or herself, that's fine. Just go with it. And you don't have to go too far with it. You can just say, yes, you are. You don't wear diapers. Yes, you sleep in your bed. That's great. But it's okay for you to refer to these little guys as little people. You're little people. You're little precious ones. You're little guys. And referring to them in the double that way, so that it's a team right from the beginning. How are my little babies this morning? Or if you don't like the word babies, how are my little people this morning? Or how are my little precious ones this morning, right? When you pair them together, it helps the toddler begin to spread his identity or her identity into that double also. It's not a competition between one child and another, because obviously parents love this little team, this little twosome, and that's one way of increasing the awareness of themselves as a group. In fact, it's always better to have the children group against the parents, because at least they're, you know, in harmony together, and the parents can handle themselves, so that's all right. I would also say that when a baby is born, and this may seem odd advice to you, but I would suggest you do not rush to give the older child tons of individual attention, because it makes it seem like there is a deficit, a shortage of time and attention, that, oh, you can't possibly look after two kids, you know. Here's your time, your special one-on-one time, and here's the baby's special one-on-one time. Because I, you know, there just isn't enough, you know, for time and attention on my part to spread between two kids. I've always thought, actually, that giving individual time to children is a message that is an activity that leaves them with the message that there is a shortage. There's not enough of me to go around, and here's your little tiny slice of the pie for right now. And try and eke it out if you can. I think it breeds competition. Little toddlers, three-year-olds, four-year-olds, five-year-olds, they feel instinctively protective towards their newborn babies. And they'll call it my baby, right? It's their baby. And they don't want to leave their baby at home while you go out necessarily. You know, they want to make sure that that baby's well looked after. They have that instinct for that. They want the mother to take that baby with her. They want the mother to be holding that baby when the baby's crying. They don't want to have the baby crying while the mother is reading them a story. You know, they want to make sure that you will look after that baby. And really, with a newborn, the baby doesn't is not competing all that much. It might be nursing or it's lying in your arms or something. So, you know, it doesn't need all that much from you usually. So the toddler feels more secure seeing that the baby is part of the scene and will not be abandoned by you. Because if you're going to abandon that baby, well, maybe you're going to abandon the toddler as well. Now, moving beyond the little introductory phase there, we have to look at what goes on between siblings as they get a little bit older. And there is a lot of difficulty between children in the house that it's not the parents' fault. It's not even a fight of competition for attention from the parents, although if a parent is careless and makes it clear that they love one child more than another, well, yes, you could definitely breed some competition. But I think most parents are not that silly. I mean, I guess somewhere there's somebody who would do that, but that would be like self-sabotaging there, because then you're going to have these kids fighting all the time. If you happen to like one child better than another, which is definitely possible because one child may share your interest, another child doesn't, or one child has your disposition, your personality, whereas the other child has the personality of, your ex-spouse or something, you know. Of course, it is humanly possible for us to prefer one child over another. And that kid, whoever that is, might change as we're raising the children. So, you know, at age 5, you might prefer A over B, and then at age 10, you might prefer B over A. But it doesn't matter. The point is that what you feel inside about that, you would, as a parent, be very careful not to disclose, right? So you're not going to say things like, well, why can't you be more like your sister? She's a good girl and you're rotten, right? Or you're not going to say anything that's anything close to that, like, you know, comparisons, you know, between one and the other. Of course, that would breed competition and make the child feel insecure and unloved, and you love her better, and it might really be true. So you got to treat every child lovingly. Whether you love them all the same or not, you can certainly be as kind and as patient and as loving and as generous with one child as with another, no matter what you feel inside. So everybody's going to get that. You don't have to do that with a ruler. You don't have to say, well, you know, I love her and I love you, so you're both getting, you know, 7 inches of a piece of, cookie bar here. You know, it doesn't have to come out fair in that way, like how many centimeters of ice cream one got on his cone and the other one got on his cone. And in fact, if a child starts complaining, you know, she gets more, you gave her more, I think a normal parental response should be something like, oh, I think it's about the same. I think everybody got approximately the same. Sometimes, you know, the spoon has a little bit more when it's your turn, sometimes it has a little bit more when it's his turn. It really, you know, I'm not measuring anything here, and just refuse to play that game. But in general, if everybody got 2 scoops of ice cream, well, I think you've done your job. You know, like, you were nice to both of them, right? And we don't have to measure the size of that scoop. Also, if one child, you know, needs a new pair of shoes, you don't have to run out and get shoes for the other child, because he doesn't yet need his shoes. And when a kid says, well, how come he got shoes and I didn't? The answer is not, you know, because I love him and I don't love you, you know, although we may be tempted to say that. And in fact, if your children have an excellent sense of humor, and you do too, you might be able to get away with saying that, and they'll realize how ridiculous, the question is. But for those who aren't that funny, or who might be on the sensitive side, you could say, when you need shoes, you'll be getting shoes. Right now, he needs shoes. Everybody gets what they need when they need it. Okay, and that message will be borne out in fact by the way that you deal with your kids. And that, again, is enough, right? You don't have to work too hard to prove that you're reasonable, fair, and loving to every one of your kids. I think if you're a relatively normal person, you're going to be doing similar parenting across all your kids. But so what I'm saying is that it's not so much really the competition for parental attention. I don't think that drives the problems that we see between siblings, although so much is written about that, as if there's intense jealousy because one feels that the parent loves the other more, something like that. I think that's usually a rare condition, and occurs most commonly where the parent really has, really does love another child more and has not taken any steps to hide that fact. You know, so, and I think that's very rare. What I do think is going on is that children are living together. And you know how hard it is to live together with somebody in a house. What do you and your spouse argue over, right? Like, what makes it hard for the two of you to live together peacefully? So whenever people have to share something, there's a matter of lack of consideration for property. So he touched my stuff. You know, that's a common one that people fight over, children fight over. You know, she wrecked my blouse, and she borrowed it, and now it's all wrecked, or he took my pen and he broke it. You know, sharing property is challenging. Sharing space is challenging. So I want to be on the computer now. You know, it's my turn. I want to be on the computer now. This kind of thing, you know, like, it's easy to live alone. It's easier. No, nobody fight with there because now it's your computer, and it's your bed, and it's your pencil and everything else. But as soon as you have to share something with somebody, it is more challenging. You can feel that they don't respect your property as much as you'd like them to, or they don't respect your time or your needs, right? So that goes on between siblings. There's a lot of learning to respect each other, and they're just little kids, and at the beginning of their, you know, development, they just want, whatever they want, in a very selfish, self-centered way, not able to really appreciate that the other person has needs as well. So it starts off with, I want that truck. No, I want that truck, you know, and then they start fighting with each other and bonking them over each other over the head with that truck, and it gets violent and ugly. Now, it really could get violent and ugly in a lot of different ways. There is something called sibling abuse, and that occurs when children are really mean to each other emotionally. They can be mean with name-calling and insulting and teasing and tricking and lying and all sorts of emotional abuse. Or they can be mean to each other physically, so they can hurt each other, right? Bonking that truck over, grabbing things from each other, pushing and shoving and tumbling on the floor and wrestling with each other, and really they can do quite a lot of damage. So when that goes on frequently, I think that it's as abusive as any other kind of hurtful, emotionally or physically hurtful interaction somebody would have with anybody, a stranger on the street or with a parent or with anybody else. Siblings can hurt each other. So it's the job of parents to educate children on how to handle their frustration and their anger, their impatience, and their intolerance. Parents can usually do this with siblings, but I'll just make a side note here that if what you're doing with your kids is not getting you as far as you want, and a child is still distressed because he or she is being routinely hurt, either emotionally or physically, then avail yourselves of a family counselor who can help the whole family in such a way that an end is put to that. Children need protection. So it's your job to make sure that no child in your family is going to look back on his childhood and remember all the painful abuse that went on for him. You want to make sure that your house is safe for everybody. So you can have rules that you make. You know, name calling, for example, can be a punishable offense. You don't have to have, like, some people will set up punishments for kids who hurt each other. And some people feel that, oh no, you know, let them work it out themselves. I mean, they have to find a solution on their own. And if the parents stay out of it, then the kids, you know, won't fight so much. Now, again, I don't think that that's true. I think if the parents stay out of it, the kids fight plenty. And I think that this area of growing up requires as much care and nurturing on the part of the parent as every other area of growing up. So I don't see here why parents should abandon the kids to themselves and their own devices. Parents have to actually teach the children how to solve problems and manage their conflict and manage their anger. So if they don't do that, then what happens is the kids are going to be practicing hostile and aggressive and hurtful forms of communication for maybe 20 years. And as they're practicing it, they're forming those neural pathways that will potentially harm them in their adult relationships. So we don't want them building that kind of pathway in their brain. When you see your kids are fighting, you can certainly begin by, coming in calmly. Because calmness is catchy, just like hysteria is catchy, right? So if a parent walks in the room and the kids are they're screaming and they're yelling and they're tearing at each other, if the parent comes in shouting, which the parent will feel like doing because the anger is catchy, all right, so that the fire in the air is catchy, so the parent will come in going, now calm down, everybody calm down right now, you stop this right now. In fact, the parent's energy is just reflecting the child's energy, the children's energy, and it is not calming. So if the parent comes in the middle of that screaming and speaks very slowly and even quietly with a very calm air, it's interesting. You might find it amazing to see that the children will soon calm down. Calmness is catchy too. So as the parent, you're the one who wants to set the tone. So you can come in and you can say, excuse me, gentlemen, but I think that you guys need to stop dealing with this right now and sit down. Just sit down and tell me what's going on. Something like that. You know, like you're speaking slowly and quietly and in an unruffled, unflustered way. I mean, unless somebody's, you know, causing bleeding or something, you can take a few minutes to speak calmly, even though they're not going to stop fighting right away. They'll still be fighting. But if you just stand there and keep speaking in that monotone, slow voice, they will soon calm down. You can at least experiment with that, okay? And then when they're calm, you can ask them what happened. And one person at a time can tell their story, just like happens in marriage counseling. You know, well, you tell me, you know, from your point of view, what happened. Okay, very good. Now you tell me what happened, you know. And the counselor listens to each person and summarizes each person. Now, after you settle, you know, what went on and what each person felt, and you solve that problem for now, then you can give step one of the two times rule in solving problems, which would sound like this. You could say, okay, so you guys, if you go slower and tell each other what you want in words and try to work out a deal with each other, then you'll find that it's easier to get what you want. Both of you will get what you want. You may have to take turns, but everybody will be happier. So please try that next time. And that will be step one. Well, next time will be 5 minutes later when they get into a trouble again. You know, they'll be fighting maybe later that day, or if not that day, then surely tomorrow. And then you'll come in with step two. So again, you'll start off with calming them down, trying to find out what the problem was this time, creating a solution for the problem this time, or helping them to solve it, right? And then you come in with step two, which would be, now I told you before, you know, here's what you need to do. And you can give them steps of solutions to typical problems that they might have. For example, one person might just walk away and drop the issue, or one person may need to set a boundary for the other person. So let's say somebody calls him a name, so he has the option to just walk away and forget it. He has the option to come and get a parental help if he feels he needs it. He has the option to set a boundary by saying something like, if you're going to call me names, then I'm not going to lend you my book this afternoon, a toy, or play that game with you. I said I was going to play with you, whatever. So you can give them some of these options on how to solve their problems. And then after you've discussed all that, you go to step two, which was to reiterate, right, what you said before. I want you to work this out in words. I want you to use the solutions that we've, you know, examined yesterday or the day before, whatever. And if you can't do that and you dissolve into screaming at each other, insulting each other, or hurting each other, then such and such consequence is going to happen. And it's going to happen first before I ask you what the problem is. Okay? So if I see somebody here hurting or insulting, name-calling, teasing, grabbing, hurting, pushing, or any other disrespectful or unsafe behavior, there will be an immediate consequence for that person. And if I see both of you doing it, so each of you will have that consequence. If I only see one of you doing it, then that person will receive that consequence before I ask them why they were doing it. After the consequence, then we'll have a discussion. And you should actually name the consequence that you're thinking of. Now, you can take a look at my book, Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice, because there's a whole lot of consequences offered there as options. I don't want to go into them now. But you do need to have a true deterrent, something that will affect them. And then on the third time and all subsequent times of conflict, that is the kind of behaviors we're talking about here, unacceptable, unkind, hurtful behaviors towards each other, they should be disciplined. All of those behaviors need consequences to convey the message that you do not tolerate unkind, hurtful, frightening, or disrespectful behaviors in your house, not towards you and not towards each other, right? So that's why you have to give them a consequence. Now, at the same time, you do want to give most of your attention, really, not to bad sibling behavior, but to cooperative sibling behavior. So when you see the kids getting along with each other, really you want to attend to that. You want to walk by them and say, wow, you guys are playing so beautifully together. What good brothers you are. What good sisters you are. What great siblings you are. What a great gang you are. What wonderful children you are. Whatever, you know, however you want to name it. Or that's another word for people who play together in a nice way. You're so cooperative today with each other. So you can make sure that whenever you see them sharing, or you can even set them up to share, and then you can use the CLEAR method. Again, listen to earlier versions of these lectures, and you'll learn something called the CLEAR method, comment, label, reward. So you can actually give a child a bunch of treats and say, here, give these to your brothers and sisters, and you have one yourself. And as the child hands out these treats, you can say, oh, you're doing a great job of distributing all the cookies. You know, that's so generous of you. You know, and, oh, you know what? I think everybody should get two, you know, instead of one. So, and that way you've actually rewarded the generosity and made them, again, a team, right? So you could do that. Also, when there is a victim, somebody who's been hurt, if he's not bleeding and needing hospital attention or anything like that, then give more attention to the wounded person than to the perpetrator, right? Like the one who's, well, especially, if he is bleeding, you just have to take him, you know, right away for medical attention. But if he's not, what I'm thinking of is, you know, oh, what happened? What, you know, let me take care of you. This would be, for example, let's say a toddler squeezes the baby too hard and the baby starts to cry. Don't turn to the toddler right away saying, what did you do that for? You hurt him. Don't even give the toddler any time of day, right? Don't give him any attention, no verbal response. Turn to the baby and say, oh, poor baby, oh, you're hurt. And then get, you know, take that baby out of the room and, you know, go tend to its little wound, whatever it is, and kiss and hug it. And so that the toddler will see, oh, this actually doesn't work. And this, you know, this, the baby, the victim, gets more attention than I do. And that can work at all ages as well. Now, also another technique to use is have a child look at a victim. And so if the child makes somebody cry, you can turn to the six-year-old and say, now look at your three-year-old sister. You see her crying there? And make the six-year-old look at the three-year-old's face. You see, you took away her toy, and what does she look like now? Does she look sad? Okay, well, she's not happy, is she? She's crying. She's crying. And she's very sad. And you're drawing attention to the way that child feels so that the older one can see, oh, you know, I really didn't want to do so much damage. And usually they don't. I mean, these are all good, lovable children. They really don't want to do so much damage. So when you make the child look at the emotional damage he's caused, and you can even ask him, do you want her to feel that way? Do you want her to be that sad? You know, the child will shake his head. No, I don't want that. Okay, so then let's make her feel better. What can we do? You know, giving praise through children also bonds them together. So let's say a three-year-old is making a great tower with some Lego or something. You can say to the five-year-old, let's say the five-year-old's name is Josh and the three-year-old's name is Jake, okay? So we say to Josh, looking at Josh and giving eye contact to Josh and even maybe touching Josh, say, Josh, do you see what Jake is building? Isn't that great? What a clever little brother you have. And this way, instead of just turning to Jake and saying, wow, Jake, great tower, good for you. And then Josh is sitting in the room thinking, oh, nobody ever notices anything I do, you know. Instead, what you've done is you've bonded the siblings together by praising one through the other so that one gets all the touch and the eye contact and everything, and the other one is the one who gets the praise. He's the one who's being talked about. So, okay, your strategy, in summary, give a lot of attention to cooperation. Bond the children together by treating them as a team and reinforcing the team concept verbally, and rewarding all children. If one child does something good, make sure that everybody in the family gets a reward for it. If somebody gets a good mark, everybody celebrates. If somebody learned to tie up his shoes, everybody gets a treat, you know, like, so that they all feel like a team together. And set strong limits on hurtful behaviors and make it clear that there are other options. Teach those other options and discipline when it comes to children hurting each other. And even so, you know, kids will have different personalities. I'm not saying we can guarantee that nobody will ever, you know, pick on each other or anything. But in, by doing these things, you are doing what you can do as a parent to help your kids get along with each other. And one last thing, I'm just remembering, don't forget the parental model. Obviously, if you are squabbling with your husband all the time, I don't know how successful you're going to be at teaching your children how to negotiate well with each other. So if you need some marital counseling, go ahead and get that too, because you want to provide a good model of how to negotiate and work things out and live peacefully together. Okay, good luck.